Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast brought to you by Huntworth. Huntworth bringing you quality hunting clothing and packs at a price you deserve. Check them out at huntworthgear.com. Not sure if I mentioned it on the last podcast or not, but we got some rain. Total Archery Challenge there, and I was using the Huntworth rain jacket, and that was one of the first things from them that I was like, if we're going to do this, you need to send me a set of your rain gear, and it's about perfect. It's not breathable, and, you know, breathable rain gear is, like, super expensive, but it's very, like, durable, huntable, I guess is the best way to put it. It's not too loud, and you know, shot really, really well with it on. Didn't have any issues. It's not loud and it's durable. Those are the things that I look for. You know, I'm not going to use this to save my life in Alaska or something like that. But, as part of my gear, as part of my layering system, as part of the gear that I bring with me, especially when I'm planning out of state hunts and stuff like that, super great piece of gear. And I don't think I mentioned that on the last podcast, when we were talking about Total Archery Challenge. So that right there, is one of my favorite pieces of gear from them. Just because I think that that's a hole in a lot of guys' systems is the, is rain gear or something to keep you out hunting, in that annoying, light rain style of, weather. So, just want to put that out there. Real thankful to Huntworth and all of our sponsors, all of those, guys. This podcast is, kind of goes against maybe one of our sponsors. Carl, works for, a rival, competitor, saddle company. But up at the Total Archery Challenge, we were shooting together on the line up there and we've known and talked to Carl ever since that company became a thing, and talked to him shooting some traditional bows up there. And he was talking up this bow that he hunted with, and then he goes on to say that it's $100 bow off of Amazon. And I couldn't, like, wrap my head around that. I mean, the bow that I have, I feel like I got for a steal at like $300, $350, something like that. But if you were to buy that bow, new and pretty, it would be, you know, over $1,000. Even the bow that we gave away, that Bear Montana longbow, which was a nice shooting bow. It's a one piece longbow. It's still $400. So for somebody who doesn't really know if they want to go down that rabbit hole, you know, even $400 to spend is, you know, I don't know if I want to commit to that. But for $100 or less, I think these bows are actually like $90 on Amazon. That's an easy Father's Day gift or a birthday present or a Christmas gift when you don't know, you know, what to ask for. We spend more than that on beer, on definitely on archery equipment, definitely on clothing, saddle gear, any of that stuff. So this is a podcast, and once you listen to it, you'll hear Carl is passionate about this bow in particular, but knows what he's talking about. He isn't just saying, okay, well, it's worked for me, so it's got to be great. He has a very vast background in traditional archery. And we are going to give one of these bows away. So I was talking to Carl and I said, you know, for the price of this, I think we're just going to give one away. you can follow along with us a little bit to figure out how we're going to do that. But basically, we're going to get one of these bows. We are going to have, we're going to send it to Carl. He's going to set it up because on the podcast, he outlines some of the things that you can do to this bow to make it better. You know, cause out of the box, it does need a little bit of tweaking. And we're going to get it, in the hands of somebody to just try, kind of maybe, give you, you know, from the drug dealer mentality, the first one's free. Right. But, you know, for $100, you know, and with, the support of all the Patreons, all the sponsors, everything that we've got going on with the show, we owe that to you guys, the listener. So we're certainly going to do that. And you know, with our sponsors and Patreons and all that, give a shout out to, you know, obviously Huntworth, Latitude with their new sticks. If anybody's going to be down in Tennessee at the Mobile Hunters Expo or the one up here in Kalamazoo, Latitude's going to be there. Sticks are going to be shipping here very soon, but you'll be able to get your hands on them, see them, play with them there. Big Shot Targets. Brandon Pirelli just shot a great bear in New Brunswick. His first bear. Shot up with a bow. Awesome. Can't wait to get him on here. But their targets, I've got the one in my basement. I've been shooting and shooting and shooting and shooting. And, I continue to, be impressed with the quality of those targets. And you can use, code BHC, for 10% off on their website. But remember, those guys are just great dudes. Vitalized Seed, we're finally getting some rain, so our food plots are going to be doing a little bit better. I was just talking to Mark about getting that seed in the ground and kind of watching the weather and figuring out how we're going to do that. The guys at Zinger giving away, you know, not only Zingers now, but a dozen arrows of their Kanadi arrows. Phenomenal arrows. Shot really well for me at TAC. And Austin at Genesis 3D saw up at TAC. He's just released those stick clips for the Latitude sticks, as well as that bridge separator. I don't remember what the name of it is, but those are just keep selling out. And like I said, I was a little skeptical about that product until I got it in my hand and spent some time in the saddle with it. And really, really works great. But for all of the support from them and the giveaways and everything that they do for us, we're gonna put some of those resources into giving away one of these bows because it's the right thing to do. And from the Patreon standpoint, we're gonna be doing those giveaways. Like I said, I was wrong. First week in July when the quarter comes to an end, and we'll be getting those giveaways out to you. But Josh Lazawi out of Ohio is our latest Patreon. I did get your t-shirt and your swag pack that was shipped out, and some of the other sending out a saddle to try out to Mike, and Robbie needed a tether, sending out all that stuff to our Patreons because we've built the community. And that's what we're trying to do. That's what we're trying to curate. If you guys want to be a part of that, you can go to patreon.com/Bowhunter Chronicles Podcast. But if not, don't worry about it. Tell somebody about this podcast. Tell somebody about our podcast. Tell somebody about what we're doing over here. But this podcast, if you were ever interested in shooting traditional bows, didn't know where to start, didn't really know what to buy, how to go about it, this is the podcast for you. I know you're going to enjoy it. Thanks, as always, for listening. All right, everybody. Adam back with another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast, and definitely a bow hunting podcast, a archery podcast today. Carl Kasuth, switching it up. He's usually on these things talking about saddles and all of the neat new gear and his sewing and all the things that he does. And we're going to talk a little bit about traditional archery. If you go back, he's got a great video, pure video shooting a really nice buck last year, 2 years ago with a longbow, I believe. You know, one of those things that you always dream of, and I guess what's maybe like the biggest fear for someone switching to traditional gear is you say, well, we're going to go out with no expectations. We're just going to shoot a doe And then a buck walks in, and I think you missed the doe, as a matter of fact, and shot the buck, or maybe there was two shots involved there. But gonna talk about that. So how are you doing this morning, Carl?
I'm good, man. I'm doing all right. Doing okay. Yeah, it's a little muggy here this morning in Missouri. I think that humidity is getting ready to kick in. We've been pretty spoiled so far this year, but it's kind of hazy and a little bit muggy out there, but it's okay.
So I want to go into like a little bit of your hunting background, to like kind of where you started and kind of how you've come. But I don't know if you remember, but the first time I ever met Carl, we were at an ATA before Tethered was even at ATA. We were staying at this little crappy hotel by ATA standards, for sure, eating the breakfast buffet. And I think it was you and Chad, and we're like, oh, hey, how's it going? You know, yeah, we're here with Tethered. We're all staying everywhere. We're just checking it out, just kind of walking through in the very, very early days. And it sounds like that was, you know, 5 or so years ago, because you said Tethered has their 5-year thing coming up, right?
Yeah, that was me and Sean Chadwick. Arnie and Greg were kind of separated from us doing their thing, and me and Sean were doing our thing, kind of looking for manufacturers. But that would have been the 2019.
I think it would have been 18.
Yeah, 2018 ATA show, I think. But yeah, this June, this month is it's Tethered's 5-year anniversary, and we're very, very excited about that. We got a lot going on and a lot of things coming. But yeah, Sean Chadwick and I, whenever we met up with you over there at that ATA, yeah.
Yeah. So how did you come up hunting? Like, how are you introduced to the sport and archery and all of that?
Well, I got my first bow when I was 4 or 5. It was I don't know if you remember them. They probably still make them, but they were called Critter Getters. Mm-hmm. It's a little red compound. It's got the hinge, but the wheel hangs from it. They're like a 10, 15 pound draw or something like that. That was my very first bow I ever had. And then I just went from there. I had a Martin Lynx that I shot forever and stepped into a high country when they came out. You know, I went through the whole, like, nothing unusual, you know, as far as like the progression into archery. My entire family has been in archery, you know, since I was a little kid. My dad, was my youngest brother, are two of the best crack shots I've ever known in my life. They always downplay it, but they're shots. Both of them are. And my middle brother, he's big into hunting, not so much the target shooting. Yeah, just kind of been a family thing, ever since I was a kid. And, I started hunting. I think I started going with my dad when I was really young, and we just sit on the ground, and he was really good at calling in deer and stuff and getting them close. So I was able to see him, never able to actually see him take a shot or anything with his bow from the ground, but I was able to go with him. I started venturing off on my own pretty quick. Probably around 12 or 13, I think. And, you know, just going out on my own. And, I shot my first deer when I was probably 13, I think. Unfortunately, I did not recover it. Everybody thought that I was going to. My uncle and cousin were down. My cousin was actually sitting there whenever I shot it. I was quite dejected my first go around right out of the gate, you know. I hunted through high school. Nothing major, you know, a couple of does here and there. And then I went in the military right out of high school and kind of hung it up for a while, about 7 years in total. And whenever I moved back home and got right back into it. And that's whenever I kind of discovered traditional archery, you know, as an adult, basically. I was in my early 20s and started messing around with the traditional archery and stuff. And I would say since then to now, so the last 20 plus years, I've primarily been hunting with traditional archery equipment. I've had a few compound seasons peppered in there. And I had reasons for those, which now I realize were kind of unfounded and unnecessary. but yeah, primarily just, you know, just been with the stick bows, whether it's a longbow or a recurve. I have nothing against shooting compounds at all. I've enjoyed the hell out of it. The last year I hunted with a compound, I think I killed 5 deer. You know, that was after my North Dakota hunt. I don't know if you've seen that. That was from 2 years ago. The one you just mentioned was from last year, that buck from last year. But 2 years ago, well, it would have been 2021. It would have been 2020 up in North Dakota. I shot that velvet buck in the hips and just botched that shot so bad. I shouldn't have been shooting that far. And basically what happened, you know, I've been dropping 30-yard bombs plus out here at home leading up to deer season and just owning it, you know, just absolutely crushing it. And, you know, there's a saying, you know, nobody can beat you in your own backyard. And I think that's true for most people who shoot a lot. But whenever you get out in the wild, into everything changes. Murphy's Law comes into play. The deer wants to live. It's going to move around, you know, and do different things. And I still don't know what happened with that shot. But regardless, I hit him way back through the hips. Luckily, got in the guts, hit I think clipped up an artery or something, but recovered the deer the next morning. So that worked out. You know, we didn't push it at all that evening. So did everything right. The shot sucked, but from that point forward, we did everything right and had a successful recovery on it. But that deer, it spooked me. My confidence was really, really hurt as far as shooting trad gear after that buck. And so the following year, I picked up my Matthews and I went out and I killed like 5 deer that season. I never even touched any of my longbows or recurves. And so then last year I started out in North Dakota with my compound and couldn't get on any deer up there. It was terrible hunting. And then came home and said, screw it. And I picked up my longbow and just started shooting out here. But the difference is that I completely changed the way I looked at it and how I approached it in a hunting situation. I put a self-imposed shot limitation on myself of 20 yards. And that was my max. I prefer to be that 15 to 17 yards is like my bread and butter. I can almost shoot that without even thinking about it. Cause my mind's eye, that sight picture is so developed at that 15 to 17 yard range. I can do a hold. I can hold for 3, 4, 10 seconds, whatever, or I can snap shoot. It doesn't matter. But I put that self-imposed shot distance on myself and just accepted the fact that if it's outside of this 20 yard radius from my set, it doesn't exist. Just enjoy the show and be glad to see the deer. You know, that's kind of the way I approached it. And from that point, once I took that mindset, it was gravy from there. Because, you know, the only limitation, in my opinion, that you have with a traditional bow is range. That's it. To me, there are no other downsides. Some people say, well, they're long and this and that, and shoot them out of the saddle. I disagree, you know, because it's just like anything else. If you practice it, it's going to become second nature and you're going to be able to do it just fine. You know, I've killed 3 or 4 deer over the bridge, weak side with a 62 inch bow, you know, so it ain't nothing but a thing if you practice it. But yeah, once I changed the way I looked at traditional archery from a hunting perspective, my confidence with it is just through the roof. That hunt you mentioned earlier, I missed that doe. She sprawled on me big time. She just flat out ducked me. My left and right was perfect. I was so proud of the shot because I did everything I was supposed to do, except I don't think I'm going to run a deer anymore. Because that grunt just gets them all tensed up. I might just say hey or hi or something before I let the arrow go. I don't know. But yeah, I missed that doe. And then an hour later, the buck came through and I shot him through the heart. You know, but the cool thing is that doe didn't rattle me at all. It didn't like hurt me mentally. for the buck that was getting ready to come around. I just accepted it for what it was and just moved on.
Have you ever been overwhelmed by the hundreds of food plot seed mixes out there? Well, you are not alone. And Vitalize Seed has developed a seed program that takes the guesswork out of food plotting. Vitalize Seed has two core mixes, the Nitro Boost and Carbon Load, to keep it simple. Nitro Boost is their spring-summer food plot mix, and Carbon Load is the fall plot mix, each having a diverse mix of over a dozen different seed types that are highly attractive to whitetail. Food plotting made simple, but it gets even better. Each mix provides necessary nutrients to the soil, making for better plots each season and saving you money by needing less Roundup and less fertilizer each season. The 1-2 system simplifies your food plots just how nature intended. Vitalize Seed, make biology work for you. Order now at vitalizeseed.com. So what do you think that is from a traditional standpoint? And it's funny because kind of how this podcast came about was we were up on the line at the Total Archery Challenge and we were messing around with the bear bows and you were kind of showing Andrew and, you know, we're like, oh, well, we'll shoot for a bow or whatever. And, you know, you shoot and the day before with your own bow, you were shooting the 90-yard bison or whatever. And there's a video of that. And yeah. you take a long shot and then the next one, you just like snap shoot it. Right. And I'm like, oh man, that wasn't a very long hold. And you're like, sometimes if you feel it, if it's there, it's there. And I feel the exact same way. I don't know why, but I think it's okay to miss with the traditional bow. Like what you said, like how that shot didn't rattle you. You made a good shot. I feel like with a compound, you're required to hit what you're aiming at every single time. Like, and people who don't shoot a lot probably don't understand this, but like when I'm shooting on our indoor league, I can make a really good clean shot and miss and feel better about it. This is with my compound, but not hit the spot. Or I can do a drive-by target panic and shoot a 15 that scores a lot better. But in my head, I'm like, that's awful. With a traditional bow, like when you hit what you're aiming at or when the arrow goes where it's supposed to, it's like the most, it's such an awesome feeling. But then when you miss, even if you miss by, you know, a quarter of an inch or a half inch, whatever, you're like, man, that was fun. Like, you don't have the same like reaction, or at least I don't at this point. Why do you suppose that is?
I think a lot of the stressors aren't there with traditional archery. Oh, by the way, if I only missed by a quarter or a half inch and that was a bad shot, I'll take that all day. To me, I don't think a lot of the stressors are here with traditional bows. I think a lot of it's because of the simplicity of them. Take all the modern components and materials that they build limbs and stuff out of, take all that out of it and you strip it down to its bare essence. Essentially, it's a stick and a string. You know, that is really what they are. Doesn't matter, longbow, recurve, takedown, three piece, doesn't matter. There's something about shooting one of these. And it's archery in its simplest form, basically. And it just, for me, it's just like it's the anti-stressor, I guess you would say. I mean, with modern archery and compounds and releases and movable sights and adjustable stabilizers, multiple strings, the tolerances and the precision that has gone into archery is so profound now. It's so, so incredible. They damn near shoot themselves. They really do. They're so, so accurate. And to hit on your first point, like you can, you mentioned you shouldn't be missing with, especially like at 20 yards or whatever. You should not be missing your spot with the equipment they have now. And I agree with that to a point because they are so accurate and everything is just so precise on them. But when you are 2, 3, 4 inches off the mark at 20 yards with a longbow or a stick bow, you just smile. You know, it's just like, I don't know. Being able to see the flight of your arrow is something also that is very underappreciated by if you don't shoot slower bows. You know, like my fastest, all my, because of the arrow weights I choose, I shoot between 11.5 and 13 grains per pound of draw weight on all my hunting arrows, well, arrows in general. So my bows are kicking it out there between 165 and 175, depending on if it's a longbow or recurve limbs on it. So they're not fast by any means. And I usually have a white feather combination on them, on my arrows, so I can see them, you know, really well as they're going down range. But seeing the flight of that arrow is just very satisfying. And you know, the instant you release the string on a trad bow, if it's going where you want it to go or not. It's just a thing. Like, you know, when you shoot enough and, you know, day in, day out, you know, as soon as you let that string go, if it's a good shot or not. But yeah, seeing the flight of that arrow, you know, just, you can sit there and chase that spot all day long, you know, and not ever like drill it and hit it. But when you step back and you look at it at the big picture of what you're doing, you're shooting really well. Cause most of the time I shoot at a spot, whether it's in the garage, if I'm shooting the garage, it's a spot about the size of the bottom of a coffee cup. And if I'm outside, I've got my Reinhardt deer targets and stuff like that. But, yeah, I forgot what the original question was you asked me.
about traditional archery, like why is it more like satisfying, or like why is it okay to not be as precise in our mind? Because everything that you're saying, with the compound bows and everything like that, like you just draw to here, anchor here, line this up. And then when you draw your traditional bow, maybe you have a click, maybe you touch the fletching to your nose, maybe you walk the string, or maybe you hold your point an arbitrary amount above the target, but it isn't like dialed into the millimeter.
Right. And this, if there's any trad guys, diehard trad shooters who are listening to this podcast, this is probably going to cause a little bit of controversy, but all those things you just mentioned, I do all of them. I may do none of them one day and I may do all of them the next. So I just turned 48 in April, and it took me a long, long time to figure this out when it comes to traditional archery. It is not the bow. It is the shooter every time. You know, you can take $1,000 bow and $100 bow and you put them in the right hands and you're going to get the same result. And it's all because of the shooter. And I think one of the reasons that shooting the traditional archery is so satisfying is because, like you said, you've got all these things with compounds that you have to line up. You've got your grip, you've got your sight and your peep sight correlation. Then you've got your bubble on your sight. Then you've got your release. You've got that anchor point. You may be shooting back tension. You know, there's so many things that come into play, and you have to get all this set and dialed before you ever even think about letting that arrow go. I've already shot 2 or 3 arrows by then, you know, and one of them, I may have short draw a half inch. The other one I may have pulled really tight into, you know, feathered the nose, held. Sight picture was right. Let it go. I spent so many years trying to do this style or that style, gap shooting, instinctive, you know, doing this with my group, doing this. And there's good things to be learned from all those styles. I had a fixed crawl. I shoot 3-under now. That's all I shoot. I had a fixed crawl I was playing with for a while years ago, but I came to the conclusion, for me anyway, I'm not a competitive 3D shooter or spot shooter. There are some very, very good ones out there. You'll see them on the Lancaster Classic every year. You got your John Dimmers. There's some guys out there, you know, that are hit the 3D circuits who are very, very good at their craft, and they do everything in a very specific way. I'm not hunting spots. You know, I'm hunting critters, live animals. So, like whenever I go out here and I shoot at my Reinhardt target, I got a couple deer targets out there. You know, they've got the rings, you know, the 8 and the 10, the 12 or whatever. I don't aim at them at all. I can see that crease in that mold. I'm aiming at that crease. I'm trying to crease them. Every single shot is what I'm trying to do. And when I go up there and pull my arrows and it's a great group or whatever, they're all 8s basically, because I'm not aiming at that, at those spots. Cause that's not what I'm out to do. But I think, yeah, the satisfaction, just comes in the simplicity of it. And you're replacing all the mechanical stuff in that compound from the release. I mean, you look at some of the releases they have now, you know, you've got the, what's Chris B's?
The Ultra View.
The hinge. Yeah, the hinge, the button release. You've got Dudley's stuff, Noctuits. Love those releases. Stands. You've got all these releases, and they're just super precise. I mean, they are like NASA precise. And then the bows themselves, you know, all these bows now are running neck and neck with their technology and everything. So you're taking all of that, and you're now making your own body responsible for all of that. So you are trying to be that precise. Don't get me wrong. I am always trying to hit the hair off a gnat's ass. You know, that's what I'm always trying to do. Very rarely am I successful, but that's the goal. So when you do have those days and those rounds where you go out and you're just smacking arrows every, that's when you know the machine, which is you, is in tune. All those tolerances are very tight and very precise. So you're putting everything on you instead of all the mechanical stuff that goes along with shooting a compound bow, I think.
So one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, and specifically what you were talking about bows and things like that, is, you know, when we are at the Total Archery Challenge, you're saying, I sold all my high-end bows. I'm using a $100 Amazon bow. So I'd like you to talk about that. But also what I'd like to know, because it's something that it escapes me, and you can use it. I understand it, mostly because of John and because of, you know, going down this path here with the podcast and all that stuff. You know, spining arrows and, you know, left tear, right tear, all that stuff, like where you're supposed to be, center shot. And I know that all of that stuff applies in some degree, or it should apply 100% to traditional equipment, but you don't have the same things to adjust. You're not adjusting the rest. You can adjust your knock point. There are some things you can adjust. And when you talk about, or talk to guys that are really into the traditional archery, you know, they're like, okay, well, it's this many twists, and I got this from a brace height. Can you talk about the tuning and the arrow stuff that goes along with bows, and then like what goes into like a good bow or a usable huntable bow?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, so it doesn't matter. This applies to the $1,000 bow. This applies to the $100 bow. So here's the $100 bow right here. This is the Black Hunter longbow. Yeah, I mean, it's made in China. It's an Amazon bow. Hate it if you want. We live in a world economy now. That's just the way it is. You know, they're not perfect when you get them, but with just a few little tweaks and adjustments, you can make them incredible, absolutely incredible. So yeah, first thing I'll talk about, this is obviously, this is a three piece, takedown bow, with a reflex deflex, limb on it. There's bamboo core limbs. They're just your standard limbs. This bow is 60 inches long, string knock to string knock. And I've been running them at, whether it's the recurve limbs or the longbow limbs, I've been running them at right around 7 3/4 inch brace height. Now, brace height does a couple of things. It can affect the tune of your arrow to a certain degree. If you don't have a unlimited supply of different spine arrows, and you're at least in the ballpark on your spine, which I'll get into, you can adjust this. You can make that arrow stiffer or weaker depending on how you adjust the brace height. So as a right-handed shooter, whenever my arrow goes into the target, if it's too stiff, it's going to kick, as I'm looking at the target, it's going to kick to my right. It'll be in that, it'll kind of start flying that way, and it'll go into the target with the knock going to the right as a right-handed shooter. If that arrow is too stiff for the bow, and that's the spine of it. And if it's too stiff, that means that you need to go to a lower spine arrow, or depending on the arrow manufacturer, it'd be a weaker spine, not lower, because generally the lower the number, the higher the spine, or the stiffer the spine. So you're going to go to a weaker spine arrow, or you need to have a bow with more weight, which generally you don't want to do. So you just want to find the arrow that's pretty much spine for what you want to do. As far as the bow itself, do not overbow yourself. I don't care if you're pulling an 80 pound compound and you want to start shooting a trad bow, get a 40 or 45 pound bow. You can kill deer with either one of them. Promise you, no problem. There's been more deer killed with 45 pound bare recurves than probably all the compounds put together. But yeah, the spine is pretty critical to get the most out of your bow. So like this bow is 46 pounds and at a 28 inch draw length. That's another thing about the Amazon bow. I think these limbs were supposed to be 50 pounders. It's kind of fun in a way, because when you start playing with the limbs, you don't know what you're going to get. You may order a set of 50s and they may be 60s. It just depends. And then the tiller will be off on them or whatever, but you can adjust all that. But yeah, so if I lower the brace height on this, so I take twist out of the string, I make it longer, so the brace height gets lower. That's going to make the bow shoot generally faster, harder. And the reason why is because the string has more contact for a longer period of time with the arrow than at the higher brace height. So at the higher brace height, it's letting go here. And at the lower brace height, it's letting go here. So now you've got this extra. Now that's very, I'm being very dramatic there. We're talking 1/4 inch to 3/4 inch adjustments on brace heights. So that's going to, by having that longer contact with the arrow, that's going to push your arrow harder, longer, and make it behave like a stiffer arrow. So again, if that arrow goes into the target and it's too stiff, you might try lowering your brace height to put more energy into it to bring it back around to center. I bare shaft tune every set of limbs, every bow I've ever had. That's all I do. No feathers at all. Start off at about 8 feet and make sure it's like in the ballpark. And then I'll start backing up. If it flies really good at 8 feet, I'll back up and I'll keep doing that. I should be able to take, if I'm doing my part and have a good crisp release, I should be able to shoot a bare shaft from 20 yards of the field point and it fly reasonably straight and go right where I want it to go. If you are completely off the chart with your release, if you pluck a lot, drag your release, if you don't have a clean release, and this has nothing to do with all those different shooting styles I was talking about. This is just being clean off the string. If you're clean off the string with your release, you can bare shaft tune arrows. If you're not, you're going to be chasing your tail because you're going to be getting all of these different readings. Your arrow may throw weak one shot, and then it may go stiff the next shot. It may go knock high in one shot. If you're not consistent with your release, you will not be able to bear shaft tune properly. But if you are, then you can. So yeah, I'll just bear shaft tune. And once I know that I'm pretty much down the center, I know my spine is correct for the bow. My brace height's pretty good. If I got any porpoising, which would be knock high, coming out of the bow knock high, it's one of two things. Either my knock point's too low and I'm getting a false positive because I'm getting slap off of the shelf. Or I need to raise that knock height to get it to keep from porpoising and hitting the shelf going downrange. And those are very fine-tuned micro adjustments. So that's the brace height. Also, you can affect if you've got a really good arrow set up and it's very forgiving. And by forgiving, I mean I can take the same arrow and shoot it in probably four different bow setups, you know, ranging from a 43 pound up to a 50 pound and get pretty good results out of it. So it's forgiving in the fact that I can take it across a pretty wide spectrum of bows, but every bow seems to have a sweet spot for brace height. And the sweet spot is subjective, depends on what you're looking for. Depends on if you're wanting the most speed out of that bow and performance, or if you're wanting it to be the quietest it can be and the most forgiving it can be. Generally, bows that have a longer brace height are going to be more forgiving and generally a little quieter also. But the perceived quietness can be tricky when you're the shooter. It's best if you got somebody around who can like stand off to the side and hear it. They can really tell you, okay, I'm hearing some twanging or something like that. And you can make adjustments from there. But the limb designs are what's going to determine if you're getting that loudness or string vibration. By and large, generally your longbows are going to be more forgiving and more quiet than a recurve because you don't have that recurve of the limb. You don't have that string contact. It's inevitable you're going to get string slap on a recurve. That's just the way that goes. And then we have, what else were we talking about there? Tiller. So the tiller on the bow is the measurements at a exact point on the top and the bottom limbs. And with the takedown, I just use the riser. You know, I got a metal ruler. I'll just bump the riser and go straight out perpendicular 90 degrees to the string and take that measurement. And I'll do that on both ends. If you have a one piece bow, some people will use the fade outs. It's a little wedge of wood in there. And right there where it fades into nothing, they'll use that as their measuring point. Or you can, to be even more precise, you can just take a tape measure or a yardstick and go from the very end of the limb and come down to, say, 18, 19 inches, whatever you want to make it, somewhere in here, and put a little mark with a pencil, and you make it the same on both limbs, that mark, and then measure from that mark. So what you're after is you're wanting to see what the tiller is on each limb. All of these bows, and it even says so on the Amazon website, they come with a positive tiller, which is kind of very, very uncommon. To my understanding, you even want an even tiller or a negative tiller. So basically, like on this bow, it has an 1/8 inch negative tiller, meaning, let's see, this measurement here on the top limb is 7 3/8 from there to the string. On the bottom limb, it's 7.5. So that's an 1/8 inch different negative tiller. So this is a longer measurement here than the shorter one. And I want that because I shoot 3 under. This limb is already getting a head start on the draw because of that measurement. And I'm pulling down here, or I'm pulling up higher than the middle of the grip. So basically what you're wanting to do is you're wanting, when you release the string, you're wanting these limbs to react at the same time and bottom out at the same time. And that's what makes for a smooth shooting bow. A lot of people who shoot split finger, meaning, you know, they've got one finger above the nock and two below, will shoot an even tiller bow because they're putting more pull up on this top limb than the bottom limb. But that's the basics of tiller. There's tons of people who are a lot more knowledgeable than I am on YouTube and different things who talk more about tiller on the bows. Going back to us shooting those bare bows at the tack. So it was, we picked up those bows. You remember we were shooting those things. The dude just had a handful of arrows. And I mean, oh yeah, they were both porpoising like crazy, just like traveling, like, yeah, knock eye bad, slapping off the risers. You know, they just grab a handful of arrows and throw them out there. And there was no rhyme or reason for, they were shooting the same arrows out of the 40-pound bows that I think they had a couple higher weight bows there. I can't remember, but yeah, they were all mostly stiff and they just slapped knocks on the strings. They were just, it was crazy where they were at. But yeah, that drove me nuts. I don't know if you can tell. That last arrow I grabbed out of the scrap bucket they have there at the line, the found arrows. I think I shot that one arrow. And it had a zinger on it. It had a zinger fletch on it, and it flew just as good as the ones that they brought.
Yeah.
So
how did you land on that particular bow? Because it would seem counterintuitive, right? So if you've got these high end, or you're talking to custom makers, and you're obviously further down this rabbit hole where you're doing all the measurements and all the everything, and like, at what point do you say, I want to see what this bow is, or did you actually get your hands on one?
Man, I was, the Black Hunter started popping up in my feed on Facebook and recommended videos. There was, the Black Hunter longbow reviews. There's a guy called, his name's Kramer Ammons. He's got a fairly large traditional archery channel. He did a great review on a Black Hunter longbow. He compared him with, basically, it was a review of all of these, there's like 7 or 8 bows on Amazon, all under $200. And this was one of them, and it's well under $200. And then there's the guy off, what's it, Great Plains, I think, let me see here. Yeah, Great Plains Bow Company. He has on YouTube, he's got a series on this Black Hunter, showing some of the things you can do to it to really take it to the next level from being out of the box. But yeah, I started seeing this thing. Guys were just talking it up. You know, they were saying, man, this thing shoots. And so I found it on Amazon. I was looking, I was like, this thing's $100 bill. I'm like, really? And I was like, okay. And, you know, I've made a lot worse decisions with $100 bill, you know? So I grabbed one and, just started playing around with it. Now, lucky for me, I've been doing this for quite a while. I've made a few of my own bows from laminated bows and different things. I made my own little ILF bow several years ago. So I'm comfortable with hacking and filing and carving on risers and limbs and stuff like that. And so I got it. And the first thing I noticed was the riser shelf. It's because these risers, I'm sure, are cut out in a CNC machine, but the shelf had a huge radius in it. Like it was like the end of the Sharpie. It was just really rounded, so there wasn't like a defined shelf. If you tried to put an arrow on there, it would just slide off. So I took a small round file and a flat file and filed that down. If you go to that Great Plains Bow Company, he's got a 3 or 4 part video on him redoing this Black Hunter longbow, and he does exactly that. Very detailed. It's super awesome if you're interested in one of these. Within 20 minutes, I had the shelf lined out where it needed to be, and I took a file to one of the string grooves because it was a little bit off center. And lengthened it out a little bit and made it a little bit deeper, hit it all with 220 sandpaper, sprayed it with some matte finish. And that was it on this particular one. you know, some of them you might find you get a little bit of a limb twist or whatever. You can, it's all very, very easy to manage and take care of with basically sandpaper and a couple files. Anybody can do it. And, you know, you're in that game for $100. But honestly, the first time I shot this bow, like as soon as I got it, I didn't even shoot it. Cause I saw the riser, that shelf. I'm like, okay, I'm going to fix that right out of the gate. Cause I kind of already went down the rabbit hole before the bow even got to me. And I'd found that video series, knew what I was probably going to have to do. So I did that. You know, I took care of the riser and made sure the limbs were good and everything. And when I put it together and I shot it the first time, I was pissed. I was very upset because it shot so good. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you freaking kidding me? This is $100 bow and it shoots better than some $1,000 bows I've had my hands on. I couldn't believe it. I was just like, all right. And a lot of that may be, you know, as you go down your traditional journey and you do it more and more, if you practice the craft, you're inevitably going to get better at it, you know? So I'll chalk some of that up to just experience. I've gotten a little bit better throughout the years. I'm not a Byron Ferguson by any means, you know, but I've gotten better at it. So that could have been part of it. But then I really started, every bow I shoot and then I get, I always do it without a quiver. I hunt with a quiver all the time. It's always on there. But when I'm first shooting a bow, I want to feel the true essence of that bow, so to speak. I want to feel what that bow is doing, what kind of feedback I'm getting from it. Am I getting some vibration? Does it feel like, you know, one limb is stiffer than the other? String slap on the arm, you know, that's another thing. Adjusting the brace height can help cure if you're getting string slap. Some people have to wear an arm guard no matter what bow they shoot. It's just the way they're built. It's however their arm is. They can't get it out of the way for whatever reason. They need to wear an arm guard. But I started just really shooting this bow and getting the feel for it. And it was just that good. It just kept performing. And it was an absolute joy to shoot. It really was. And that's whenever I was just like, okay, so I ordered another set of limbs for it. And they arrived and I put them on. And the fitment on this bow it's crappy, right? I mean, like there's like a little ledge right here. It may not fit perfectly right here. Those are things that you're not going to get out of the box on one of these. You're just not. I don't personally care. I'm out. It's not a closet queen. I'm not putting in any beauty contest. It's out. It's to kill animals. That's what it's for. And I put those other ones on. Perfect. So at this point, I have two risers and I have four sets of longbow limbs and I have four sets of recurve limbs. And if you do the math on that, that comes out to $500. And I essentially have eight separate bows. I mean, come on, you know. And they all range from 37 pounds to 57 pounds. I've made formulas for all of them. I have checked all the limbs. If they need some tweaks or a little filing or something done, if I need to swap them on pretty much every set of limbs I got for this thing, recurve or longbow, I had to swap. They had the little Chinese writing that was supposed to be on the bottom limb. Well, they all come positive tiller and I want a negative tiller. So automatically their bottom limb, I put on the top. And then checked it. Okay. Confirmed. Yes. Now I'm negative tiller. So I would take some goof off and get rid of that. And then I put my own, I get a paint pen and I put my own, you know, like this says 46 at 28. So I've got my own, true weights on there. I got very accurate actual weights on all the limbs at 28 inches. So yeah, that's how I ended up here. And, I've zero regrets. I sold all my high end bows. I don't have any more. I got rid of them. Now hate on me, whatever, you know, there's two very definitive camps, especially when it comes to this bow. It seems like you're either all in on it. And I think most people that give it a go, find out that they can really enjoy it. And it's not, quote unquote, a beginner's bow. You know, you can just turn this thing into a tap driving machine. So yeah, either people are all in on it, or you're going to have people in the camp that, you know, you can't beat the beauty of a Tolki or a Centaur or a Black Widow. And just, there's some bowyers out there who just make amazing bows. They're just beautiful. The craftsmanship's top notch. I mean, they're incredible. But at the end of the day, if it's a traditional built bow, you know, action bamboo or bamboo core limbs or whatever, the performance is negligible. It really is. You know, I've got a very precise chronograph sitting out there. I don't care about speed out of these things because I know they're not fast, but I'm curious about it. I always want to compare bow to bow, setup to setup, and just see which setup is doing what. And that's what I use that for. And I've compared this bow to many high end bows right here. You know, that's not speculating. I went out and I did it, you know, and we're talking apples to apples, same draw weights, same arrows, the whole nine yards. And at the end of the day, we're talking 2-3 feet per second difference. You know, sometimes this bow's faster, sometimes that bow's faster, but either way, it doesn't matter because the yardages I'm hunting, it just doesn't matter. So yeah, it's, I'll hop on a soapbox for this bow. I will. Cause it is that good. It is that good.
Well, I think that's great to hear because it's, you know, here on this podcast, you know, John will shoot, he's shooting V3X and, you know, we have the ability to shoot whatever. When the bow shop was handing out free bows, I got the Bowtech Carbon Zion and I have a Bear Alaskan over there simply because I want people to be able to see that, you know, whereas that stuff is nice and I really do, especially after this last tack, that little foot thing on the Matthews makes me want to buy one just to have the little stand, right? I mean, that's
Oh yeah,
that's great. But you know, the bows that I'm shooting are simple. Same story as you. Like I have the ability to get whatever bow I want to go out and get with whatever equipment, whatever sight. But when you're talking, you know, a $600 sight and a $2,000 bow and a $300 rest and all this stuff to go out and kill that same deer at 15 yards. And, you know, for a lot of people at, you know, over bait or whatever, you know, who are we really doing it for? And I think from a traditional bow standpoint, I mean, if you don't know anything about them, you don't know the makers, you don't know any of these names, you know, you think of automatically Black Widow. Okay, well, it's $1,200. You give them the money. They send you a bow. If you like it, you keep it. If not, you send it back and they'll send you a new one. But it isn't, you know, you have the bow on Amazon where you're like, that can't be good. Or you have like a Samick Sage or some of these, you know, I have a Martin Jaguar and I've seen like the Kingfishers and stuff like that, where you're in that couple hundred dollar range, that Bear Montana longbow. But other than that, where do you even start? And even like at our club, there's, you know, the coffee guys who are 100 years old and they all shoot traditional and they're in there every day at 9 o'clock in the morning. So if you want to shoot a bow, but you're talking, you know, $900 to $1,000 just to get on the list to have somebody make you a bow. So it's really tough, right, to be like, okay, this is really fun. It's really something that you can really enjoy without that barrier of entry. And I think that this does a great job of kind of bridging that gap, right?
Yeah, because if you are that guy, if you're the new guy and you don't know if you're going to even enjoy it, if it's going to be for you, you know, $100 to find out is a pretty cheap cost of admission, you know, to see if it's something you're going to enjoy. And if you're going to just to find out, you know, that's a no brainer to me. And then again, with this particular bow, it's a good bow. It really is. I'm just, you know, other than the fit and finish and that weird thing with the shelf, I don't have anything bad to say about it. I just don't. Other than the strings that come with them are pure garbage. They're awful. Like, don't even take it out of the plastic. Just go ahead and throw it in the trash can and be done with it. I don't even know if they're like a Dynaflight or D97. I'm not sure what they are, but they're just it's an endless loop string and it just stretches. It's not consistent. I think for any bow, I shoot Flemish twist strings, which means that there's no, you know, it's got the twist appearance there at the end. There's only serving here in the middle, not at the ends. I've got a buddy on Facebook who makes all my strings for me. I used to make my own. I just don't have time. I just don't do it anymore, but he makes all my strings. They're Dynaflight strings. That's all you need to do. Just put a good quality string on it. Most of these guys out there, you can find them all over the traditional pages on Facebook and stuff, selling their strings. You know, you can get them for $30 and $40 to your door for a string for your bow. And you put a good string. You put a very, very good string on a quote unquote subpar or inexpensive bow, it changes the bow completely. That's the Achilles heel for probably a lot of the bows that come out in that lower price range. This one's not an exception. You know, this one, Samick Sage, you mentioned earlier, and some of those other ones, they have those cheap strings on them. But Jason makes these strings for me and puts these little ham steel puff balls on them, and they work great. Really like them a lot.
So the next question that the guys are going to have, if they're listening to this and they're saying, okay, well, you know, I can spend $100 and, you know, $30-$40 a string. I mean, you all in, right? You're basically at the price of a string for your a set of strings for your compound is going to be $150, you know? So
at least,
so you're all in there. At that price, recurve versus longbow, like for a guy starting out, trying to enjoy this, you know, wanting to dip their feet in, where would you point them, or how do you make that distinction?
I'm not even going to go there because that's such a personal thing. I shoot both. Truth be told, I probably shoot this bow with the recurve limbs on it just a hair better than I do the longbow. And I think the only reason for that is because it has a slight speed advantage over the longbow. Recurves are generally faster, but has that slight speed advantage. So therefore it makes up for if my mind's eye and my sight picture has mentally screwed up my distance a little bit, that a little bit faster bow, a little bit flatter trajectory can help accommodate that and make up for it and make me look like I'm a better shot than what I actually am. So I shoot a recurve that much better. But having said that, there is something about shooting a longbow. There's a certain reverence to it, I guess. I don't know. It just, I have a different feel. It's got a different vibe when I'm carrying it around. I don't know. It's weird. That's why I can't really answer that question. That's up to the individual, I think.
Well,
and it doesn't matter. It does not matter. Whichever one that strikes your fancy, go for it. It really doesn't matter. Other than I do think that the longbow is a little bit more forgiving for a new archer. just because it's you don't have that string contact. You can get away with a little bit more, a little bit more of a not so perfect release, or a little bit more string pluck, and not have it affect that shot as much as it would with the recurve limbs, I think.
Yeah. So I'm just, I always view these things from like the listener's perspective, right? So now we've got to the end here and we're like, okay, I'm all in. And then you get to the thing and you're like, okay, well, he kind of said weight. So like 40 or 45. Okay. All right. Recurve or longbow. Like, which one do I click? Right. And to that point, like for me, like, I just feel like, and it is the contact, and I don't ever even like equate things to that. But for me, it's always like, I think that the recurve is just more violent. Like the longbow is just such a pleasure to shoot. Like I enjoy shooting both of them, but because of that contact, there's more vibration. It's, it seems to be louder. And again, I'm not setting up these bows like they throw the string on there, put an arrow on there. Okay, here we go. But the long, and I have a higher end longbow, but they're just so much everything. Like they don't stack as much. I don't feel like I've had a longer draw. I just, for me, it's just like a pleasure to shoot. And I, prior to owning one, I couldn't have told you the difference. I didn't, yeah, whatever, but you shoot one and you're like, oh, well, that's cool. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. You get, yeah, I mean, looking at it from that perspective, and from somebody who is completely a traditional virgin and has never, ever even picked one of these up, then yes, I would go for the longbow. Because the rabbit hole only goes deeper. You get into ILF rigs, you get into super, super recurves. That's a whole other ball game. You want to talk about a violent bow. And yeah, the super curves can be tricky, very tricky to tune and all that stuff. But that's a whole other podcast. Yeah, the longbows are pretty hard to beat, you know, and there's just thing around and shooting that longbow. It just makes you smile. It really, even on a bad day, it makes you, it just, you feel, you're happy to be shooting them. And the other thing I think I would touch on also, you know, the quality string is so key. It's so important. Do not overlook. Just spend your money on a string. Your arrows can be pretty much whatever, you know. I've been shooting Easton Axis arrows since, my goodness, I can't remember when. Before they even had the Easton Axis traditionals. Now these are discontinued, and now I think they've got the Carbon Legacy, which I have some of those two great arrows. .204 ID, that's my bread and butter, because I love those hit inserts. Slide them into any of those arrows and build my arrows. But you know, it's the brand, it doesn't really matter. The main thing is to get the right spine and get that thing as tuned to your bow. Make it as perfect as you can. That way, when you're not perfect on that shot, because you won't be on all of them, you got a little bit of cushion there because you did your due diligence, put the good string on, you bare shaft tuned it. And of course, practice, you know, it's going to just to hone the craft. You've got to do it. You know, you got to do it a lot. And something that I've done this year, and I haven't done it in a long time, is I have not stopped shooting since bow season. Did not stop at all. I mean, I tried, if I'm around, I shoot every day, a couple times a day if I can. And when I go down to, you know, headquarters down at Tethered in Tennessee, halftime I take my bow with me in a block target or something, just so I can stay up on it. I hunted with my longbow all through turkey season. So I was shooting in the morning at 3 a.m. before I left, and I was shooting in the evening before I went to bed. You know, just like anything else, the more you do it, the more proficient you'll be at it. And I think one thing that you really want to look at, if you have one takeaway from this, odds are you're going to be coming from a compound bow. I'm going to guess, because if somebody's already listening to this, they're probably already in the space. They're already hunting or shooting compounds, and they're looking to try traditional bows. Don't nuke it. Don't overcomplicate it. Don't get set on one form or fashion. you do you, you know, and everybody's different. You know, don't try to tune an arrow or a broadhead within an inch of its life. As my buddy Troy Fowler Ransbury likes to say, you're not that good. We're not that good. It doesn't matter. You know, especially when you, if we're talking in a, from a hunting perspective, not a target perspective, but from hunting, the hunting perspective, you know, we're not that good. So, be as good as you can, but don't twist, don't get yourself, you know, in knots over it. One thing I think that's gotten lost over the years, and I've seen it happen in archery in general, doesn't matter if it's a compound, traditional or what, is people forget why we're doing this, you know, why we started doing this. It ain't worth it. You know, why did my bow do this today? Why did that arrow kick left or do whatever, you know, it's just not worth it. You know, enjoy it for what it is. And I personally believe that, traditional archery can really bring you the most enjoyment in out of all the archery, you know, possibilities, compound, whatever. You do you, no judgment. I'm just saying this, when you strip it all down and you take back to the basics and that bare bones stick and string, there's just something about it, man. And especially in the world we live in now, you get that type of, it's therapeutic. It really, really is. When you get out there, it's just you and your bow and your fling, and you may shoot like garbage that day. Doesn't matter. You know, hang it up, shoot it again later. So.
Yeah. And I couldn't agree with you more. And I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you saying that, because that's, you know, kind of where we're headed with this whole thing is, you know, trying to remove all of those stressors, whether it's, you know, shooting perfect shot, perfectly tuned arrows, shooting a 150, like do what makes you happy and, you know, ultimately share it with somebody, like, you know, have that experience and share those experiences, because you can have all the equipment in the world. You can have the $1,000 bows, but you can have just as much fun with that $100 bow and make so many great memories without all of the outside pressure. And,
right,
man, I think that's a great way to kind of end this thing out. Just do it for yourself. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's, you know, it's not rocket science. It's not some big mystery. And again, it's nothing you have to overcomplicate. Just enjoy it. And, you know, this particular bow, and this isn't the only quote unquote $100 bow, $200 bow out there. There's several others, but I do believe it's at the moment, it is definitely one of the best out there. The most bang for the buck for sure. So, yeah, it's just a way to get into it, relatively inexpensive, and start to enjoy it.
Awesome. So if people have questions or anything, where can they get a hold of you or follow along with some of these hunts? I'll put up the hunt we were talking about. And I do remember that North Dakota hunt. Now that you're talking about the velvet hunt. So I'll link some of those here, in the description, but if people have more questions or anything like, you know, how could they get a hold of you?
Yeah. Absolutely. Link the North Dakota hunt too. Put the bad out there with the good, you know, because that's part of the journey. It's part of the process. As far as getting a hold of me, you guys can message me on Facebook, Carl Kasuth. This is what I'm under. Same thing on Instagram. That's my Instagram handle. You can email me if you have any questions. I do get a lot of emails regarding the traditional gear. The emails are generally for more in-depth questions, but it's carl@tetherednation.com is my email. But yeah, I'm always happy to answer any questions for anybody. The majority of them that I get are not so much the tuning side of things, but it's just how do I shoot out of a saddle with one of these? And I need to just do a freaking video, a breakdown video of that, because I do answer a lot of those questions. It's 100% doable. And you do it enough, it becomes just like breathing. But yeah, that's where you guys can get a hold of me. And if you run into me at a show or an event or whatever, come up, say hi, ask me questions, man, we will talk till the sun goes down. So
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it, Carl. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, man.